Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 26 from chapter 19, canto 5.
Yai Shraddhaya Bhrishi Bhagasho Havir
Yashraddhaya Bhrishi Bhagasho Havir
Virupitam Ishtam Vidhi
Mantra Vastuta
Eka Pratanam Vir Ahuto Muda
Eka Pratanam Vir Ahuto Muda
Granati Puna Swayam Ashisham Prabho
Granati Puna Swayam Ashisham Prabho
Yai Shraddhaya Bahishi Bhagasho Havir
Shraddhaya Bahishi Bhagasho Havir
Viruptam Ishtam Vidhi Mantra Vastuta Eka Pratanam Abhir Ahuto Muda Granati Puna Swayam Ashisham Prabho
Yai
by whom the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha Shraddhaya
faith and confidence
Bahishi
in the performance of Vedic ritualistic sacrifices.
Bhagashah
by division.
Havihi
oblations.
Niruptam
offered.
Ishtam
to the desired deity.
Vidhi
by the proper method.
Mantra,
by reciting mantras.
Vastutaha,
with the proper ingredients.
Ekaha,
that one supreme personality of Godhead.
Pratak,
separate.
Namabihi,
by names.
Ahutaha,
called.
Muda,
with great happiness.
Pranati,
he accepts.
Purnaha,
the Supreme Lord,
who is full in himself.
Swayam,
personally.
Ashisham,
of all benedictions.
Prabhu,
the bestower.
Here's the translation.
In India,
parentheses, Bharatvarsha,
there are many worshippers of the demigods, the various officials appointed by the Supreme Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, and Surya, all of whom are worshipped differently.
The worshippers offer the demigods their oblations, considering the demigods part and parcel of the whole, the Supreme Lord.
Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts these offerings and gradually raises the worshippers to the real standard of devotional service by fulfilling their desires and aspirations. Because the Lord is complete, he offers the worshippers the benedictions they desire, even if they worship only part of his transcendental body.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
In Bhagavad Gita 9.13, the Lord Krishna says,
Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita Vajanjananya manaso yatva bhutadim avyayam.
O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded. The great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Mahatmas, advanced devotees, worship only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Others, however, who are also sometimes called Mahatmas, worship the Lord as Ekatvena Pratakvena. In other words, they accept the demigods as different parts of Krishna and worship them for various benedictions. Although the devotees of the demigods thus achieve the desired results offered by Krishna, they have been described in Bhagavad Gita as Hrita Jnana, not very intelligent. Krishna does not desire to be worshipped indirectly through the different parts of his body. Krishna wants direct devotional worship. Therefore, a devotee who directly worships Lord Krishna through staunch devotional service as recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajetam Purusham Param, is very quickly elevated to the transcendental position. Nevertheless, devotees who worship the demigods, the different parts of the Lord, receive the benedictions they desire because the Lord is the original master of all benedictions. If anyone wants a particular benediction for the Lord to award, it is not at all difficult. Yai shradhaya bahishi bhagasho havir niruptam ishtam vidimantra vastuta eka pratan namabhir ahuto muda granati puna svayam ashisham prabhu. In India, very creative, Bharat Varsha, there are many worshippers of the demigods, the various officials appointed by the Supreme Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, and Surya. All of them are worshipped differently. The worshippers offer the demigods their oblations, considering the demigods part and parcel of the whole, the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts these offerings and gradually raises the worshippers to the real standard of devotional service by fulfilling their desires and aspirations. Because the Lord is complete, he offers worshippers the benedictions they desire, even if they worship only part of his transcendental body. It sure would be nice if everybody could read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita combined with Bhaktivedanta purports. It would be so nice. The world would be such a better place. A number of things from this verse. Just in reading the Sanskrit itself and the word for word, the ishtam niruptam, ishtam vidhi mantra vastuta, ishta. When Vedic rituals, the Karmakanda rituals are presented, part of the ritual is to identify the ishta dev, which is different than the bhokta. The ishta dev is the particular demigod that is being propitiated. And one approaches this one, that one, the other one. It's described in the Bhagavatam, the second canto. Several verses, long lists of this one, that one, the other one. Ishta devs. So it's part of the ritual that they're worshipped. And then in the next line, Eka Pratan Namabhir Ahuto Muda. You invoke them by name. And the ISKCON version, the more conventional Vaishnava version of Ishtadev, is which deity of Krishna or your perhaps your temple, your home deity or something is in your heart you consider to be your worshipable form of Krishna. So there they are, Radha Nila Madhava. And that's for commonly for the devotees in Houston. It's not mandate, it's not an ISKCON law that this has to be your Ishtadev. But it's encouraged, Srila Prabhupada encourages like that, even if you have some deity in your home, and that's very nice, make your home a temple, but the deity that is the main temple deity is one should come and serve the deity, do some seva, do your service in your home, for your home deity, and for the not just because it's good for the institution, that we have lots of people that can do different services for the deity, the temple and the deity and the temple, so we can have well-organized temple. It's good for the worshipers to have that. So that's our common sense of deity worship. Prabhupada, just on this point, Prabhupada spoke in Los Angeles about the devotees in the LA community. Many of you have been there. There's Rukmini Dwarkadish and their apartments across the street where householders live. And there was a time when Prabhupada was present where it was becoming difficult to fill up the pujari schedule because the devotees were worshipping their deities in their home. Sorry, Prabhu, I'm worshipping my deity in my home. And part of the plan here is there'll be in those areas here and there and elsewhere places where families can come and stay and live near the temple. And it's not just so we can populate the deity worship schedule. It's for the benefit of the devotees that they can be proximate to the principal Ishtadev for the whole of the yatra. But in Karmakanda rituals, that even though the bhokta of the yajna is named, I had an experience once in Nashville, Tennessee, where I was invited to speak at the Hindu temple, and I didn't want to go. And they said, oh, please come. And I said, no, I don't want to go. Oh, please come. I don't want to go. Please come. All right, I'll go. And I thought it would be, an audience of people that don't know anything about ISKCON, and we're supposed to give them ABC introduction to ISKCON, Prabhupada, the simple ABC introduction. Well, there were a lot of people there, and the reason that they were there was not because it was an ISKCON speaker, it's because the pujari was going to be doing a yajna. And so I sat through the beginning part of the yajna, kind of uncomfortable. But I noticed at the very beginning that they started, I was very happy to hear the first mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Wow. Maybe this is going to be a normal something instead of the other kind. But that was just invoking the bhokta of the yajna. And then came all the other things, the Ishtadev and Ganesh and all the other things. And I walked out. I just couldn't bear it. So afterwards, so I understood that's how they do it. It's there. There's the bhokta. There's the ishtadev. There's Ganesh to remove the obstacles to achieve the stuff that people want. But it's not the tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. It's not that. Just a little footnote is, afterwards I spoke with the pujari and I said, I noticed that you have Vaishnav tilak. And he said, yes, I was trained in Udupi. And I went like this, you know, Udupi? You know the difference between what you just did and what Madhvacharya taught. He said, yeah, but it's a job. You know, I need a job. You had a job in Udupi. Why don't you stay in Udupi and do your job in Udupi instead of violating what you know? I got on his case. Violating what you know very, very, very clearly. What Madhvacharya taught. You're a merchant. Not a brahmana. I didn't quite use that exact language. I said, this is a compromise you shouldn't do. Anyway, he's a popular guy. He knows how to do all the yajnas. Although he knows the difference. And he's not trying to tell them what the difference is. He's just satisfying their desires so he can live in America. From our point of view, if you think, remember the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name, two of them are embedded in this verse, if there's a misunderstanding. One of them is etan pratan namabhir ahuto muta. It's an offense to consider the name of the various demigods, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to be equal to and independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. And that's exactly what they do in Karmakanda rituals. And similarly, niruptam ishtam vidhi mantra vastutaha. It's an offense to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be a Karmakanda ritual, which is meant for increasing your piety. And we know what increasing piety is for, so you can get the fruits of piety, the benedictions of the Ishtadev. So it's an offense to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna like that, meant to increase your piety. It's an offense because it's not. It certainly can increase one's piety, but it's not. That's not the purpose of it. And beyond the worldly piety, the transcendental piety, sukriti. There's a nice purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada is quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes there are three different categories of sukriti. Bhog Anmukhi Sukriti, Gyan Anmukhi Sukriti, and Moksh Anmukriti Sukriti. There's Bhog, the performance of pious activities where one gets pious results. And there's that kind of Sukriti. And Moksh, actually the second is Moksh, studying Vedanta, chanting of Vedic mantras, especially Om, where one can then become situated in transcendence. And bhakti is a third category, where one's inclination for service to the personality of Godhead is awakened. And one can do those things even unknowingly. Hearing the chanting of the holy name, taking of Krishna Prasadam, things that we do with the public, they don't even know what it is. It's okay, they don't know what it is. For at least as far as getting spiritual merit, devotional merit, And that devotional merit, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, over a period of time, unknowingly engaging in those kinds of activities, brings one merit-wise to the point where they can knowingly accept devotional service to Krishna, Krishna's position, and the rendering of service to Krishna. Because the world is a dark place. So even unknowingly bringing some merit into the dark place, that's what Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is. So we have public festivals, Rath Yatra, Harinam Sankirtan, book distribution, different things. It's not just on our property, but in the public where we're engaging people in seeing the form of Lord Jagannath, receiving the prasad of Lord Jagannath, hearing the sound of the kirtan, in so many different ways we engage giving the mercy of Krishna to others, who people who don't even know what it is. And you regularly do those things, the art fairs and different things, where it's just reaching out to the public and giving them Krishna in different forms of Krishna. Purposely to the point, again, where they can knowingly accept Krishna and render at least some service or do some chanting or something. So it's important in our presentation of Krishna consciousness that we do those things. It's also important, at least at a certain stage, even if we do these things that are now called bridge preaching, we do things that are people don't necessarily know what they're doing. But at some point, as that purification from that contact comes, give them direct knowledge of Krishna consciousness in a very palatable presentation, easy for them to ingest and digest and assimilate. Now the language of the Bhagavatam it's sometimes strong. The medicine is strong. But it's not a different message than the message of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada in the very beginning of the purport is referring to the 9th chapter verse of Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastamam Partha Daivim Prakritam Ashrita. That verse is in the most confidential knowledge chapter. Krishna is describing the most confidential subject matter, which is the intimate relation between him and his devotee. What Krishna feels, what the devotee feels, what Krishna does, what the devotee does in that intimate relationship of loving service. And to explain that, he makes the contrast also, what it isn't. But so the Mahatmanastamam Partha verse is Krishna's describing the great souls. They're situated in the internal potency, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. And then the next verse is describing what they do. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrata namayantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. Very similar to the end verse of this chapter, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. These great souls perpetually worship me in devotion. So that's where the purport begins. Then, right away, Prabhupada goes to, without identifying the verse number, he says, then there are those that do this indirectly. And it's similar to the next verse of 9th chapter Bhagavad Gita, text 15. Others who engage, took others, this is a Krishna speaking of in a very liberal, broad net of who are my devotees. There are those that are the most exalted. And then there are others. In a very liberal manner, Krishna is considering others also his devotees. Something quite like this verse is doing. And others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, ekatvena, as diverse in many, pratakvena bahuda, and in the universal form, vishvato mukham. There are some that do those things that don't have, they're clueless about the personality of Godhead, and that these are different aspects of the personality of Godhead. They think that's all in all. There is Brahman, or there's the demigods, or there's the universal form, and that's it. Then that's how Prabhupada is describing it in the purport. Ekatvena, it's the worshipping God as oneself. Just hearing Prabhupada describe this in a morning walk conversation, one of those Juhu Beach conversations with, I don't know who it is, but somebody that as soon as Prabhupada is pausing, he's reciting another verse and another verse and another verse. He's like a machine gun with verses. And another verse and another verse. And Prabhupada is explaining this, ekatvena, is those who worship themselves as God. Ahangra upasana, it's called. It's a procedure. Aham upasana. Prabhupada described this in one lecture. There, one hunger upasana person was showing how you do it. He was on stage and he just, you know, in front of everybody, started worshiping himself. You're God, I'm God, here's how you do it. Now Krishna did that when the rooster crowed and it was signaling its time to rise early in the morning. So in Dwaraka, Krishna would rise, take his morning bath, and perform his duties of worshipping the Supreme Personality of God, who happened to be himself. So it works for Krishna, but it doesn't work for us. And there are those that don't have that understanding. They're not thinking, oh, I'm part of the Supreme, so by worshipping the part of the Supreme, I'm worshipping Krishna. They're thinking, I am supreme. I just want to realize my divinity, my supreme lordship over all that exists. I am the Lord of all I survey. It's the same, it's just another version of the same mentality of the materialist who's thinking, I am the Lord of all I survey. It's foolish. Just varieties of foolish. And therefore, agyana jam tamaha, that the darkness born of ignorance is covering that person. So the verse, back to this morning Bhagavatam verse, with Thakur Haridasa's kindness, I came to understand something I didn't read. This is Narada speaking about the merit of Bharatvarsha, but he's repeating the words of the demigods that speak about the merit of Bharatvarsha. But in any case, because he's repeating what they say, it's an endorsement. This Bharatvarsha is a very special place. And the very part of the very special place is those persons, even those persons that engage in demigod worship. Because that's what the verse is describing. Demigod worship. And it's being described by the demigods, the demigod worship. And the demigods have a clear understanding. The benedictions that are offered by the demigods come from the personality of Godhead. Bhoktaram Yugatapasam. He's the one that gives everything. He gives to the demigods, who then give to the worshippers of the demigods. But it's coming from the personality of Godhead. Now, some people, as this verse is describing, they understand that. And some people don't understand that. And those that don't understand that, they're less fortunate. Still, they get benefit. At least they get gradual, ever so gradual benefit of at least elevation through the modes of nature by honoring the controlling system of the personality of Godhead. But there, he's out of the picture. It's just the controllers. And there's so many gods. The pantheism. And that's Bahudha Pratakdvena. Just the same language as in this verse. Eka Pratan. Pratan is, in the Sanskrit, word for word is Pratak. Pratak means separate. So the parts, but the parts which may appear to be separate, they are existing as part of the whole. And someone may see the part as the whole. The demigod is it. There's many gods. Some people think like that. Even the Yamadutas, they understand that doesn't make sense. When they go to Yamaraj and say, what's going on? Who are those people that stopped us? They were very beautiful. And with great command, they stopped us. And what are we to understand from this? Are there two gods? But we thought you were God. You're it. You're the Lord of Death. Who rules over you? You rule over everybody. Everyone dies. And you're the Lord of Death. If there were two gods, then there could be a problem. That logically they explained. That supposing the two gods have a disagreement. It should be this way. No, it should be that way. Then you got a problem. So, are you God? Or are there two gods? Or is there somebody else that's God? And if you think they're qualified, will you please explain to us? And he explains, yes, there's one God and it's not me. I'm the servant of that one God. I'm one of many servants of that one God, as are you. That's the proper understanding. Even if one wants to go to the demigods for what's being described in the verse, receiving some benedictions. And they can get those benedictions. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he makes their faith strong. And it's natural. They approach, they receive. I have faith. My Ishtadev is giving me my needs or my wants. My fulfilling my desires. I have faith. They have some, based on practical experience. And from within their hearts as well. Krishna says, I make their faith strong. Where does that faith come from? It comes from Krishna. They don't know that. They just have faith in this or that or the other thing. But so the bigger picture is not so common. But the Bhagavatam is giving us that bigger picture. Narada is speaking what the demigods say about the demigods. And this is their program. They're parts of the Supreme. And gradually, the verse says, they can approach the position of understanding properly devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's accomplished in part by their building of their faith by receiving the benedictions. And eventually they can learn those benedictions are not just coming from the demigod, from the clerk at the window, but from the man in charge of the warehouse. The personality of Godhead, who is the source of everything. Shyamasundara was describing to me how, if I can share this, how he arranged for some of the materials for the temple. He went to one place, a supplier, there's a manager that's in charge of a place. And he said to the manager, you're accustomed to doing business. Let's do some very special business this time. I'd like you to give me the materials for free. Oh, I can't do that. Do you have the phone number of the owner? You're the manager. And if I call him, will he take my call? So go to Krishna instead of, you know, the manager. Because he's in charge. If the owner says, yes, go ahead, then it can happen. And if the owner doesn't say, yes, go ahead, it can't happen. So whatever benefit, benediction, dispensing of things that demigods can do, it's from the personality of Godhead. They know that. And some people may or may not know that. But the more complete picture is to know that. And as you understand the more complete picture, it's not just the fulfillment of desires, but it's the rendering of devotional service to the personality of Godhead, whether or not there's desire. Akama sarvakama va moksha kama udara diti vrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. It's a broad net. Everyone is welcome. Whatever your background was, no problem. Come to the position of understanding Krishna. And you can understand the position of Krishna through the medium of devotional service and not otherwise. Not by gyan or karma. Not knowable. It's not knowable. Only in this indirect process, bahunam janmanam anti gyanavan mam. But there has to be, to understand gyanavan mam prapadyante, there has to be some bhakti element, otherwise it's not going to happen. Gradually come to the position of taking shelter of Krishna, then realization of Krishna becomes possible, and not otherwise. Again, I was hearing Srila Prabhupada hammering on this point during a morning walk in Juhu. Not possible. Besides, the heart cannot become cleansed if desires are fulfilled. Karma is neutralized. The modes of nature become elevated. All those nice things, without descending mercy directly coming into one's heart, as the result of devotional service, Krishna can't be understood, and that's the goal of the Vedas. Declared directly in Bhagavad Gita. That's the purpose of the Vedas. Vedaischa saya vairaham eva vedyo. That's the purpose of the Vedas. Not neutralize karma, become free from the modes of nature, get one's desires fulfilled, become situated in goodness, be very charitable and austere and simple and all things. Those are nice things. All very nice things. That's not the goal. What's the goal? Nate vidu svarta katimbi vishnu durashaya. The hopes, the aspirations, the desires of people make their hearts very hard. They can't understand. They can't understand. How can we understand? By this merciful presentation of hearing and chanting and engaging in various forms of devotional service as a result of that hearing and chanting, the purification that comes, the protection from the material energy by being situated in the internal energy through the medium of merciful devotional service. That starts with hearing and chanting. That's the Bhagavad Dharma process. It's available or accessible to anyone, everyone. Just be a spirit soul. We're qualified. Most of us are spirit souls. Pious, impious, born here, born there, sinful, just be a spirit soul and hear and chant. And in the process of hearing and chanting, try to apply the things that you hear and understand. Sevanam. Render some service according to, apply that which you have understood as best you can, under guidance and direction. The process is very powerful. Just demonstrated by the effect of process of hearing and chanting. Persons often Prabhupada would speak, these Western boys and girls, European Americans, their lives were filled with sinful activity, and by hearing and chanting, they're not doing those things anymore. Instead, they're dedicated to the personality of Godhead service. I'm not paying them, there's no fruitive thing here. It's just the purification that comes from the process of bhakti. So we have that process of bhakti. We have to apply it very carefully. Every day, very carefully. And gradually, the cleansing action goes on, provided we don't make further offenses in the course of doing our devotional service, starting with our hearing and chanting. One last thing, just comment. The translation of the verse says, in India, Bharat Varsha, there are many worshippers of the demigods, the various officials appointed by the Supreme Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, Surya. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, during the reign of different Manus, it's described the names of the various persons who were part of the demigod assembly, kind of like, what do you call it, when a mayor or president or somebody comes into office, they appoint their cabinet members, right, the department of this and that and the other thing. And then a new president or new mayor comes in and they appoint different people, their cabinet members. So at least the picture is there that the Manus appoint their cabinet members, or the various demigods. During this Manu, so-and-so was Indra, and so-and-so was Chandra, and so-and-so was the different persons. Then the next Manu, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. So the cabinet officers change. The position remains the same. It's a post, and somebody occupies the post, and Manu appoints those that occupy the post. That's at least the picture that I have had. And here specifically, the demigods are saying the Supreme Lord appoints. The various officials appointed by the Supreme Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, and Surya, all of whom are worshipped differently. So he appoints. Manu may appoint, but he gets the indication from the Supreme Lord, okay, appoint this one, that one. I mean, that's our system. And just, it's maybe anecdotal, maybe irrelevant, but Tatvavits from Minneapolis and the devotees in Minneapolis are finally getting around, after all these years, to establishing a corporation, because they want to have, be able to receive funds and get a center, and yay, after all these years. So they're in the process now of establishing their corporation, ISKCON of Minneapolis, Inc. And they're seeking, fortunately, they're seeking guidance how to go about doing that. And because we're in America, they're thinking democratic. Or because of my involvement with a court case in Long Island, I'm very sensitively, acutely aware of, according to religious corporation law of the state of New York, there are two types of corporations, religious corporations. One is, they call it hierarchical, like top down, and the other is congregational, bottom up. The congregational kind is people get together and say, hey, let's have a religion. Yeah, that's a good idea, let's have a religion. And then, okay, we'll vote, we'll decide who will be the officers of our religion. And they elect the officers of the board of directors and the officers of the corporation, both. That's the congregational kind, the bottom-up kind. And then, according to religious corporation law, there's the top-down. That is, the hierarchical head, the Pope, is the classic example that, you know, they know of in American law. There is the Pope, and you know, in the Vatican, and then the Vatican decides who are the archbishops, who are the bishops, and it's not by Okay, let's have a vote amongst the Catholic congregants. Who would you like to have as your bishop? And they run different people, and you know, they canvass, I'd like you to vote for me, I'll promise you this, that, the other thing. It's not a democratic model. It's decided in a hierarchical fashion. So what type of organization is ISKCON? We have congregations, but on what basis do we have congregation? On what basis do we have devotional service? It's like the demigods. Their understanding, we've been selected, of course, by Manu, but it's by the personality of Godhead. Because without that, what's the position? Anything that they can do is dispensed by the personality of Godhead. It's a descending process. Ours is clearly a descending process. And how we function should similarly reflect what's going on. The structure, again, it's maybe irrelevant, but the structure of organization should reflect the Bhagavatam and reality, spiritual reality. And if one receives, Hari Vilas shared this with me once, more than once. He was in France, and Hari Vilas's service was expanding, I don't know in what way, taking various responsibilities in Europe. And Prabhupada told him, when Krishna gives one some increased responsibility, this should be understood as that Krishna is pleased and Krishna is recognizing, not just, the Prabhus. That's important, absolutely important. But absolutely, absolutely important is that Krishna is recognizing and one is responsible to Krishna. And similarly, if one has a responsible service and one doesn't do it properly, the reaction is greater than one who doesn't have that responsibility. So if you're going to accept responsibility, better be very careful that you do it properly in Krishna consciousness, where Krishna is pleased and not displeased, because it's a great responsibility to execute something that Krishna has given, just like this human form of life. Everyone has a responsibility having this human form of life. We can say, it's party time. Or we can say, this is a great responsibility. Or becoming a parent, or becoming a teacher, or becoming something, becoming a pujari, or anything you take on is a responsibility. It's Krishna's giving some opportunity, and it's Krishna's recognizing. But then one has to execute that service in a proper manner, in Krishna consciousness, not with pride and I've got this position, that service, this something. Then you'll be spoiled and things won't go nicely. But if it's done in Krishna consciousness, that's taking the proper advantage or the facility that Krishna is giving with some service that he's provided. So when this new temple opens, y'all going to have a lot of service. Whatever level of service y'all got, it's going to increase. Whatever that is. And that's good. Do it in Krishna consciousness and train up a bunch of other people to help you do all those services. Not just live nearby, but train others to do the services nicely. And Krishna will smile. Okay, I'll end there, see if there's any discussion. Questions? A bit for both.
I was thinking about the Manu. I think the Manu on the guys are aspects of Krishna.
Sure, they're avatars.
He's the Manu.
Yeah.
In that sense, God is appointing.
Very good. Very good point. That certainly straightens out the concern. But the person who's hearing, here's a doubt about that concept. The person who's speaking is Narada. The person who's hearing is Manu. Saravani Manu. So, Saravani Manu may take his instructions from Vishnu. Sarvoma. Yes.
So there are some systems of religion that seem to be trying to focus on God, like Judaism, Islam, Christianity, where they don't want to worship demigods.
Well, they don't even have a clue about, as far as I know, what demigods are, what's going on.
They don't have much of an idea of guru either.
Well, it's not clear, but they all have a position. Someone's taking that position.
Yeah.
Whether it's Muhammad or Christ or their priest or somebody.
So I guess the question is, I've heard about the question in Christianity that Jesus was considered a Vaishnava in some ways, and also was considered a Kshatriya Shalakar, but there are some people in the Vedic culture that worship demigods and aren't interested in God. Some people in Christianity that are trying to worship God but don't have such a systematic way as the Vedic culture. So how do they compare?
Different varieties of confused. Or avidhi, without proper understanding. Sincerely confused. I'll just, on this note, one fine day, some number of years ago, sitting in my office in New York, I got a call from Cincinnati, Ohio. I don't know how the person got my name, but it was a person that was doing a PhD research paper, and he wanted to know, what's the Hare Krishna view on the position of Christ? And I said, you may not like this point of view. He said, go ahead, try me, kind of answer. And I said, some people in the world see Christ as God, we see Christ as the Son of God. And the oneness between the Son and the Father is a Vedic wisdom, where the Son represents the Father, and one who purely represents God is equal, is to be respected equally. And I paused just to see, he was going to grumble. And he said, this is the Eastern Christianity conception. And the Western Christianity conception says the other. And I never knew of that distinction before. But this is, a scholarly person. The Western is Christ is God. Any bumper sticker is going to tell you that. And the Eastern conception is very close to our conception. He's an empowered person, representing God, transparently giving God's message. God sent him to this realm to give God's message. In that sense, worshipable like God. So, that's not the position of a demigod, it's the position of a representative of God, a transparent representative of God. And through disciplic succession, if that transparency were to have continued, then one would have disciplic succession of spiritual masters. We don't have that, unfortunately. We have something else. This person, that person, the other person, different varieties. So that there's some comparison. Now, the cosmology, you need cosmology to understand the position of demigods. Right, like where in the universe do they reside? What's their program? And Western theology, at least the part, to the extent that I'm exposed to it, there isn't even a distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God, what to speak of the positions of within heaven and the persons who reside there in heaven. What is it? It's not even fair to partly cloudy. It's very cloudy. Very cloudy. Aviti. It's the Vedic wisdom, and then you go to the Vedic wisdom, and the Vedic wisdom is also, that's maybe fair to partly cloudy. People that, the information is there, but they don't get it. And partly they don't get it because they don't want to get it. They don't want to surrender the personality of Godhead. They don't want that. They want their stuff, and they have their way to get their stuff, and so they have faith in how to get their stuff. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. And you know how popular that song is. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj has a parody on that. Something, 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 something. You know, a home by the sea, a color TV, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Something like that. So the purpose, Krishna says it in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, most people think that the purpose of the Vedas is to become an enjoyer of material nature. Most people think like that. The purpose of religion is to become pious, and in piety you have prosperity, and then after this life, more prosperity. In the land of prosperity, the land of milk and honey.
Some people that follow the Vedic system, I've heard some way to say that just following the Vedic system is good for the accepting of joy.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
It's not always as superior to some of these other systems like Christianity and so forth. However, it seems like, maybe I'm understanding wrong, but some people in the Vedic culture, if they just want to enjoy it.
Yeah. That's right.
There are some people in the other religions, it seems like they write goals for God, but they don't write the process.
Yes. The knowledge is not complete. So, appreciating all of what you just said, taking a metaphor that Prabhupada used, the elevator and the staircase, these people want the elevator. They don't even want to find out about the staircase. Just go worship God. Just accept Christ and worship God. Just do the elevator program. But you know, their idea of who God is and what heaven is and what service to God is, it's a whole other thing. Without one of our congregation members here was sharing that in her school, the religious class she had to take, the Christian professor was teaching about heaven, and it sounded nice, serving God. But then the picture of what heaven is it's mom and dad, the kids, and Fido, and the turkey dinner on, you know, on the table. And it's what, that's what heaven is, without, you know, the having to pay taxes, without the problems. That's the conception of serving God. We enjoy. Nice, you know, pious man, scripturally faithful man, but that's his conception. So, what to do? And give them prasadam and chant Hare Krishna. And maybe here's a nice book. Some persons that have that kind of faith, when they hear the transcendental truth, they resonate with it. It's powerful. But until then, it's indirectly a jnana sukriti, engaging them some way or another. Something else? Mataji? Yeah. Not opposite. just incomplete, not always going opposite direction. They can be, you know, really, really slowly going towards the quality of goodness, which is towards the Supreme Lord. Is that all right? That addresses your question? As their piety increases, the propensity to go towards the Supreme Lord also increases. It's not, you know, eventually you do enough pious and automatically you'll get to devotional service. It's by the mercy of a devotee you get to devotional service. But the likelihood of their saying yes to devotional service increases when the opportunity comes. It's like dry wood and wet wood. Dry wood can ignite more quickly than wet wood. So the benefit is the dry wood, the wet wood is becoming more dry by that process. And as someone here said, by acceptance of the process of devotional service, excuse me, the process of Vedic sacrifice, there's some submission to the personality of Godhead. Maybe unknowing, but some submission, because Narayan is the source of that Vedic wisdom. Some submission unto him. And gradually, that submission bears its fruit. Thakur Hari Das, you have something?
The other religions seem like they're very cloudy, you know, have a clear conception. But I thought I heard that Bhakti Gamal Thakur said that pure devotees become all the various.
Pure devotees do what? Your voice trailed down.
In the various religions, in all religions. I don't think maybe I misunderstood that, or maybe how could that be?
Well, I'm not sure what you're... Could you say again what you're saying? Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that within the various religions of the world, the essence of religion is found?
No, he said that you could find pure devotees in all religions.
I don't know about that. Pure devotees, Prabhupada spoke, you know, where's the real Christian? So I don't know what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. I'd like to see the reference in the context of the reference, but sincere seekers within all religions. They're looking for the essence within. That makes sense. But you know that. There are different ways of thinking of who is a pure devotee also. There's different, just like Krishna is doing in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Ekatvena pataktvena. Those are also my devotees. Because they're doing those things. Worshipping the universal form. Worshipping the demigods. Worshipping themselves. They're also my devotees. That's a very broad definition of who is a devotee. And then amongst those, because it can lead them to the topmost. Or the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you can't do this, do that, you can't do that, because it will lead you to, if you do it properly. So the eligibility for a candidate for devotional service is this strong desire or sincere desire to achieve that, even if I don't know what that is. I may have a very cloudy idea of what that is, but if it's sincere desire, Krishna helps one come to that position and provides means to directly or indirectly come to that position. Directly is best. Okay? Someone else? Yes?
Yes, Maharaj, on the point of the demigods, we lack pulse. So the problem makes a very interesting point in some of the later chapters of the same volume. You know, there are chapters like the structure of the universe, the movements of the sun, etc.
Yeah.
So Srila Prabhupada indicates that all of the demigods, jiva,
yeah,
jiva type, like all of us, but
yeah,
of course, because of their increased piety, they are those quote unquote posts, positions. Srila Prabhupada then says there's a difference when technically Narayana, Vishnu, because the sun is considered the king of all planets and sustaining all of the varieties of life, from the demigods down to the human beings, birds, beasts, aquatics, etc. So Srila Prabhupada makes a very interesting distinction, saying that the original sun god is Surya Narayana, Vishnu himself, whereas the other sun gods, as we know, like Yudhaswan, Surya Devi, are representatives of Surya Narayana. That makes that distinction.
That's wonderful. I've always wondered, how does this work? Because Vivaswan appears, but this, you know, you don't have a universe without the sun. So this explains it. They're representatives of, like, expansions or something?
Yes. Whereas because the sun, that's Shakti, the supreme planet, and that all the immensities from the demigods down are benefiting from the sun. And light. So Vishnu, or the Supreme Lord himself, is a maintainer of everyone. So he particularly enters the sun world, and by his personal potency, the sun has that ability, a shesha teja, unlimited potency. And all the other demigods, like Vivaswan, Surya, Jivas, but the original sun god is Surya Narayana. And of course the other exception is Lord Shiva. Although he's countless.
Between now and tomorrow morning's class?
I'm leaving today.
Oh. Okay, sometime before you leave today, can you point out where those verses are? And just share it with somebody? You got a minute. Got a minute. While we're giving him a minute, I'll
just...
Well, here's the same book. While Shankarpada is finding those references, I didn't read the article that you gave me a copy of, Thakur Haridas, but just yesterday I was hearing Prabhupada speaking about two things happened besides the paper that you're writing for BTG. Again, this morning walk conversation in Juhu, Prabhupada was speaking about the so many moons, although they say stars, and they're thus so many suns, he said they're actually moons. And went on with, you know, this person giving his verses after verses, interrupting Prabhupada. It was like two voices at the same time in the recording, hard to hear. But on the other hand, something else that happened yesterday was somebody sent a reference where it's a YouTube connection where it's a 3D exploration where they sent the Hubble telescope into the darkest part of what they could see visibly from Earth, and you know what's up there. And then when they're there for 11 days, the Hubble telescope took pictures, and then they gave a 3D animated depiction of what the Hubble telescope saw, and it's constellations and galaxies. And so one model says, and Dhanavir Maharaj is really, like, at least the last I spoke with him, adamant about this, Prabhupada said there's one sun in the universe. Everything else is moons. And over here, Sataputta speaks in a different way, that our universe may, one of the models, his presentation is there are different models of the universe, and one of them is the universe is our solar system. And there's one sun within our solar system, but there's many solar systems. And therefore, there's room for Vedic wisdom to accept there's many suns within the universe, because a galaxy doesn't have, we wouldn't be able to see it if it had so many coverings, seven coverings of such big dimension and so on and so on. So it's a question I don't have an answer to and would like to have an answer to. And there's different voices that say it's like this, or some that say it's like that. Are there multiple suns within our universe, or multiple solar systems and what the scientists call galaxies? And I'm not educated enough to even know what that means, a galaxy. Galaxy is a collection of stars, I guess. And you know, some that look like this and some that look like that, and you know, they have pictures of galaxies and stars. Are they all just moons reflecting the light of our one sun within the universe? Or are there different models of what a universe is, and within that which has this covering, there's many of them?
In March, I found the reference.
Okay.
I can read it, or if you want to...
I'd like both read and just
okay,
say what the numbers are.
Okay, it's chapter 5, canto 5, chapter 23.
Text number?
Text number 3.
Okay.
The chapter is entitled the Sitchumar Planetas.
Okay.
Can I read the chapter?
Please.
When bulls are yoked together and tied to a single post, to thresh rice, they tread about that pivot without deviating from their proper positions, one bull being closest to the post, another in the middle, and a third on the outside.
Fine.
Similarly, all the planets and all the hundreds and thousands of stars revolve around the pole star, the planet of Maharaj's Dupa, in their respective orbits, some higher, some lower. Fastened by the Supreme Personality guided to the machines of material nature, according to the results of their prudent acts, they are driven around the pole star by the wind and will continue to be so until the end of creation. These planets float in the air within the vast sky, just as clouds within the hundreds of tons of water float in the air, or as a great chain of eagles, due to the results of past activities, fly high in the sky and have no chance of falling to the ground. They should look up as her, it's actually a very long work on that. It's like 4 pages. Now read the first...
just read the part that's...
Yes.
Sorry, you know the part. Fasten your seatbelt.
All right, here's the section. It is also significant that the predominating deities of even the greatest planets have been offered their exalted posts because of the very valuable pious activities they performed in previous births. This is indicated herein by the words karma, nirmita, gaitaha. For example, as we have previously discussed, the moon is called Jiva, which means that he is a living entity like us. But because of his pious activities, he has been appointed to his post as the moon god. Similarly, all the demigods are living entities who have been appointed to their various posts as the masters of the moon, the earth, Venus, and so on, because of their great service and pious acts. Only the predominating deity of the sun, Suryanari, is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maharaj Dhruva, the predominating deity of Jupiter, is also a living entity. Thus, there are two kinds of entities, the Supreme Entity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the ordinary living entity, the Jiva, Nitya Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. All the demigods engaged in the service of the Lord, and only by such an arrangement are the affairs of the universe going on.
But time is up. I'll look at that purport. I'm sure there's some nice things there. So it with that picture, I'll end with a question mark. With that picture, it seems that in this universe, there's at least two. Forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is in Dhruvaloka, where the personality of Godhead resides, because Dhruvaloka is a Vaikuntha planet within this universe that's not destroyed when the universe is destroyed, because it's not material. And another form of the Lord is Surya Narayan. Of course, there's many other forms of the Lord also, but those two that are pivotal or fundamental for the universe to exist. Any light on that from this nice purport?
Well, Maharaj, even not just this particular purport on the discussion, but even just one of the chapters in this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled The Movements of the Sun. So it very nicely explains just that, the movements of the sun and the position of the sun as being the king of all planets. And Srila Prabhupada says that there's only one sun within each universe. And that sun is diffusing its rays and heat all over the universe.
Well, then the question that I've heard two different voices about is the Dhanavir Maharaj voice that says that, and Sadaputta saying there are different models of what a universe is. And the universe may mean a galaxy or solar system, and then a galaxy and solar system, and that's a universe. There are different, using Sadaputta's approach, the Bhagavatam is speaking of different models simultaneously, and so to focus on this model is perfectly fine. Focus on that model, but the big picture is there's multiple models being spoken of. It depends which one you're speaking about to understand what's being said properly. To be continued. See you tomorrow morning. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.